Welcome to the Mind Goal Hour. My name is Jeff Bellier. We're talking about goal achievement strategies. Some people call me Dr. Jeff. Some of my more sweet and affectionate clients call me Papa Jeff. I work with personal and business clients on goal achievement strategies, from losing weight to quit smoking, handling stress, playing better golf, and I even get into some of the cosmic stuff of enlightenment and awakening. And I've had companies set sales records, and I have had clients win their golf country club championship and swear me to secrecy that they never worked with me. My strategies are, well, they're not mainstream, but they have a rhythm that touches on mainstream. By that I simply mean that I balance the more traditional approaches to goal setting and goal achievement, of identifying and writing down and following some traditional models. But I really stress the need, the critical need, in my opinion, for inner work. And so I try to achieve a little rhythm in my show and in my talks. Then we start with some practical steps, and then we talk about some inner work. And then we do some practical observations, and then we do some more inner work. And we kind of finish up with some neat visualization and guided imagery. We have a call-in number, a worldwide call-in number now, I understand. 877-876-5227. So if you have anything you'd like to comment on or question about goals and goal achievement strategy, please feel free to call in. That's 877-876-5277. Now, the good news is that my shows always start with pie. And I'm going to repeat things from earlier shows I've been on for about a month. Well, we just recently moved from Monday to Friday, and I really like this time. On the East Coast, it's 5 p.m. And you know what time it is where you are. And we start each show with PI. And if that's new to you, that's an acronym for Primary Inner Exploration. And my PI has 8 pieces, and I'm going to cover those or repeat those. And each week we tend to focus on one of those 8 pieces. And so if you're a write-it-down type or just a listener, either way, my PI consists of 8 pieces, as I said. And here they are. We have health and fitness, of course. And we have relationships. Another piece of pie is career satisfaction. We have sense of self. And we have priority mission. And we have legacy, which you'd like to leave as a legacy in this lifetime. And we have community and team spirit. And then home and the comfort of home. So that's our pie. We've talked about health and fitness on a couple of shows, relationships on a couple of shows, and today we're going to talk about career satisfaction. What we typically like to do is begin by looking at that piece of pie, career satisfaction, and begin by writing down or thinking, if you will, what you like about your career, where you are right now, what you dislike about what's going on in your career right now, and, of course, the goal, because we're about goal achievement strategies. And one of the things I'd like to say, and you'll notice that I use acronyms throughout the show, the PI, for Primary Inner Exploration. And another one I use is called SIFT, or sifting. And what that S-I-F-T stands for is that if you are not living a life you love, if you're not doing what you want to do, if you don't seem to be able to stick with your goals or achieve your goals, or maintain your goals once you've achieved them, then what I like to say is you're in a sifting process. And the sift is strategy is flawed temporarily. S, strategy, is, F, flawed temporarily. Listen to my show for a few weeks, and that temporary will end, and you'll be on the way to achieving your goals. So you started with career satisfaction. If that's one that's of interest to you, stay tuned. We'll touch upon the others, but the focus will be on career satisfaction. That has a lot to do, of course, with money and what we're actually doing for a job or a career. And, of course, we rarely work isolated, unless you're doing a radio talk show. And even then, you have people that you interact with. Now, we began by identifying, as I said, and writing down those goals. So think about what you like about your job. Take a few seconds to do that. You can keep thinking about it while I talk. Hopefully you like a lot. some things you dislike, some things you change, and then your goal. And the goal is where we're going to focus. Oh, focus. That's another acronym I like to use. If you have a goal, it's important to focus on it. Now, focus is a neat little verb all by itself, but as an acronym, it gets stronger. And focus is an acronym for fearless, outrageous commitment to unwavering success. A lot of times we believe we start off that way with a goal, and we lose our focus. That fearless, outrageous commitment to unwavering success gets a little fearful and a little too much waver. And we're going to talk about ways to achieve that focus. And without railing against any colleagues who deal with clients or businesses on achieving goals, I do read a lot of white papers and articles who talk about achieving goals or how to be disciplined and achieve your goals. And essentially what those articles typically do, in my opinion, is they stress the need to be disciplined and focused. And they say it 12 ways, but there's no how to be disciplined and focused. We all want to be disciplined and focused, and yet if you've ever made a New Year's resolution and or some that you haven't achieved, you know what I'm talking about. We lose our focus. We lose our courage. We lose that commitment. We decide to go a different way, or it isn't worth the effort or the energy. And this is where I believe the need for inner work enters in, because when we go inside, when we get more in touch with who we are and begin to tap into an inner wisdom that I'm convinced is there, I'm convinced by experience, that as we could do some inner work, as we go inside, as we move into a quiet inner place, we begin to disrupt some of those thoughts that limit us, that block us from achieving a goal, from moving to the next level. You know, we start out, but then the old lions of fear and doubt, that's a cheap plug for my book. I have a book entitled Taming the Lions of Fear and Doubt. If that interests you, it's on my website at MindGoal, MindGoal. If you have a goal in mind, MindGoal.com. And as I said, what happens is we begin to move in the direction of our dreams, the direction of our goals, and within a nanosecond, often, or after a certain amount of time, we begin to hear this internal chatter, this fear and doubt, this, oh, I don't know if I can do it. I don't know if I'm good enough. I don't know if it's really what I want to do. And so we're disquieted with that, and the chatter can move us right out of our focus. Well, with inner work, what happens is we move from that place where we're blocked and limited, and we begin to shift our beliefs and our values, how we feel. And we can begin to establish new habits. We can begin to move in a direction with some tools, and that's what we're going to talk about today as we get into the inner work. Some literal tools for moving into that place of greater self-realization or self-actualization, or more understanding of you, becoming more you. That as you go into that quiet inner world, and you learn how to do it and how to maintain that quiet, whether you call it meditation, whatever tradition you may use. And if you have some tools for that, mine will simply affirm that. And I'm not offering an exclusive club or an exclusive way. I am offering a model, a paradigm, if you will, that I developed over a period of about 30 years. Obviously, I started when I was very young, and developed this model that I offer to you as a tool to move into this quiet inner place, to move into a more confident, trusting place about who you are and what you can achieve. And what happens beautifully as we do this greater self-realization, this greater self-actualization, if you will, that the negative emotions that we attach with that goal, the fear and doubt, begin to dissolve. We find an inner strength that we can rediscover or discover. It's as if a new wisdom begins to come in. Or, as someone said to me today, it's not new wisdom, it's getting rid of the BS that was there, that was piled on us when we were young. And through our learning years, the harshest way to refer to it might be, this might not be the harshest, it's a fairly harsh way to refer to it, that we were socially coerced into sitting still, coming up with the right answer, trusting the rational process almost exclusively. And as a result, we lost touch with some inner wisdom, some intuition, and not the intuitive hunch, although that certainly could be considered part of it, but more of an intuition about who we are and who we are in this world and how we fit into this life. The quiet processes, whether it's called relaxation technique or relaxation response or biofeedback or how our neuropeptides are working or psychoneuroimmunology or hypnosis or imagery, those affect us and our beliefs and our values and our thoughts about ourselves. And as we move inside, as we move more deeply inside, what happens, we will revisit our goals. Now, as you listed or thought about your career satisfaction today and what you like and what you dislike, and maybe some people came to mind that you have some difficulty dealing with, as you go deeper inside, you may disrupt what you thought were your priority goals. You most certainly will disrupt some of your opinions about people that you work with, at least maybe not your opinion so much as your perception of who they are and where they are, and your reaction to them. And we'll talk about that as we move into this. As you move in the inner circle, as you move into an inner view, your view of others in your life, there's a magic that happens as you settle, as you learn to handle stress, as you learn to go quiet. I pause because it seems so simple. Just being quiet, it changes us. It does most definitely. And by achieving a habit, if you will, by spending some time in quiet meditation, let me use that term for now, by learning to use some very simple tools in meditation, you will begin to find your view not only of yourself, but of other people in your lives, in your career, your personal relationships. And sometimes there's a startling new perspective that comes up. On the one hand, what you find is that you're not as susceptible to emotional manipulation. You know, this really upsets control freaks because they can't threaten you anymore. So often in situations, particularly, I try to avoid the word abusive, but particularly strong or controlling bosses who like to micromanage or are critical, will imply a threat, and it can really be unnerving. But as you get more in touch with who you are, as you remove the blocks and limitations in your thinking, as you begin to shift your beliefs and your values, as you release those negative emotions, you increase your confidence, and you feel more in control, and trust who you are, and trust your judgment. And again, I'm speaking from experience. This happens. As you get more in touch with your inner workings, you find a magic, a strength that you may have forgotten or haven't realized that you had, a freedom that you may not be enjoying, that you haven't enjoyed since maybe you were a child, that there's a strength that moves you away from those people, not literally away, but figuratively away from those people who use emotional manipulation, whether it's a spouse or a boss. When you are stronger, when you trust more who you are, when you get more in touch with who you really are and what you're really all about, as you move closer to your goal, as your confidence increases, as you feel more in control, they can't threaten you. And there's another thing that happens that is, I think, is incredibly neat. Again, it's a little hard to articulate if you haven't experienced it. But what you find is you become more peaceful inside, as you become more settled in what your true priorities are, what your goals truly are. And as I said, as you go inside, as you spend time inside, you'll disrupt what you may write today or think today. And I think I can say this pretty unequivocally, your horizons will broaden, that you will no longer underestimate what you can achieve, that you will move into a greater sense of confidence and well-being. And what comes with that? It's a beautiful. It's a new tolerance, a new way of looking at other people. You know, it's awfully easy to blame the boss or to blame the spouse or to blame the kids or to blame someone else for how you feel. But when you achieve an inner peace, when you move in that quiet place, when you learn to visit that and quiet those lines of fear and doubt, and begin to listen to what, and I'll talk about a little later on, but I call a wisdom whisper from the heart, you find a new tolerance for other people, and you begin to accept them where they are in their development. And what you realize is that they've adopted a life strategy. Their personality and their particular quirks and the way they handle is something they decided at some point in life that this is what works for me, this is what gets me through life, this is what keeps me sane or insane, whichever the case may be. And I want to stop right here for 1 second before I go into these different personality types. There are a lot of models for that, but I'm going to offer you one that's pretty easy to spot. And once you have this little tool, it's kind of neat, because when you next come upon that person whose manner and style unnerves you a little bit, and you can say, oh, he's A or she's A, and you have not labeling, but you're spotting their dominant personality style, and you can say, well, that's their life strategy. That's what they're using to get through this life. That's what they've decided works best for them. And it moves it out of you taking it personally. It moves you a step back, and you just become detached from it and much more tolerant of where they are in their development. So I'm going to give you a very easy tool for spotting personality types. And I just want to reiterate that what will happen is as you achieve greater inner peace, as you achieve greater confidence and greater control, again, that's, you know, I'm talking inner, well, in terms of moving toward your goal, as you feel, I can do this, I am moving in the right direction, I have written my goals, I have the solid likes, dislikes, what I want to do, very well defined, and I have a time frame for it, and I've done all those neat traditional things. Now, I'm going to balance it with inner work and go inside and uncover a little bit more of who I truly am. That I'm being redundant, that you will no longer be able to be manipulated emotionally, and you will simply be much more tolerant of these personality types, because you now feel differently about yourself and who you are and where you are in this world, and you've come to a greater self-realization. But and in addition to that, you now have a tool to a better understanding of the motivation for other people. So here it is. If you have a pen, pencil, paper, and you want to write this down, great. If you just want to visualize through it, it's pretty simplistic. And essentially, it's going to be two, let's start with two lines, a horizontal line and a vertical line. Just make a big plus sign, a piece of paper, if you would, in your mind. And now, I have to stop and think. The vertical line, at the top of the vertical line, write quick. I don't mean write quickly, I mean write the word quick, or think the word quick. And at the bottom of the vertical line, write, I like methodical better than slow, but write methodical or slow. Okay. And now on the horizontal line, on the far left, write task or goals. And on the right side of that horizontal line, right, people. So as you can see, we have four quadrants. And what I'm going to do is talk about the fast, task-oriented, goal-oriented personality. That would be the upper left. So this person, you can spot them pretty quickly. They speak fast. They're animated. They can be blunt, quick, decisive, CEO type, leader type, not the best at details. They can be extremely competitive. They don't like to share leadership. They want to run the ship. They want to sum up the meeting. They don't want different viewpoints at the summary. They may take them through, but not in terms of trying to take over the leadership. They are going to have the best ideas and the best plan of action, even though they may not be thorough in their explanation of it. They are very driven, and that's their life strategy. And so the next time you're in the presence or in a meeting, and this you have this fast, task-oriented, you say, okay, well, this is this type. This is the CEO type. Yeah, they're blunt. Yeah, they tend not to be too soft with their words. They don't cushion like some other people do. Boom. They just go right to it. You don't have that done, I want it by Tuesday. Send that thing to them on Wednesday. And you have to drag out of them what thing is going where on Wednesday. And so I think what happens is I go through these personality types. Typically, people will spot themselves, and they'll spot people they know. I've offered this in a seminar format to writers at writers' conferences, and the premise I used was, here's a way to keep your characters consistent. Look at these four dominant personality types. And now just I want to mention going on here that I'm going to mention the personality types in the four quadrants. Typically, we will have one dominant style, but we also will share the subsets. My wife is nearly perfectly balanced in all these, and she may be listening, so I've covered that. And I mean it, huh? And she is. But keep in mind that don't label or box someone in too quickly. In different situations, you may see a different strategy. But over a period of time, and people you work with, we are talking about career and job satisfaction, career satisfaction, but the people you relate with, whether they're vendors or clients or sales or creative or manufacturing, whatever, you'll spot these different types. Okay, so we got the fast task-oriented. Leader, CEO, blunt, quick, decisive, likes the latest gadgets, tools, cars. If I've done a lot of training with automotive sales and communication between departments and sort of thing, and offering salespeople, I use automotive because that's where a lot of my experience is, offering salespeople this little tool of spotting personality types and dominant personality types, this works very well for them, and I get some great testimonials, some great feedback. If the CEO, this leader, this fast task-oriented, goes to buy a car, they know what they want. Usually they want the best on the lot, the best car that they can get with the latest gadgets, and they want to buy it in 20 minutes. They don't want a long technical explanation. They want to hear that it's the best and then write the check. That's what the salesman's dream, if they can spot this personality type. They can lose them. We can lose them if we simply launch into a long technical explanation, and I won't attempt anything technical about automotive. And we can lose this type because he's taking 20 minutes to come in and buy that car, and they know pretty much what they want. Spot them and make the sale. You can overlay automobile too with anything else that's in the market of consumers. Okay, so we have the fast task oriented. Now let's look at stay in the above the horizontal line and look at the fast people oriented. Now, these are your super salespeople. These are the performers, the charmers. Creative, good verbal skills. They like to dress well. They like to look sharp. They're it's all about me type. My wife bought me a pair of slippers 1 year with that embroidered on each toe, so I think she was pegging me. But they they're genuinely friendly. Great people skills. They tend to in giving seminars. They tend to get high ratings because they're likable and tend to be articulate and quick, and they like people, and it's genuine, so it's not put on. They aren't the best at details, but they can paint a very nice picture. And one of the things that distinguishes them, among other things, from the leader, the CEO type, is that the performer, the super salesman, the PR guy, the ad agency guy, they will share leadership. They can offer an idea, and they can accept a better idea, and they can ping pong that. The CEO type isn't really comfortable with that. They want to run the show, and they don't want to share it. And that's kind of a distinction. When I was trained in this particular model, one of the clues that the instructor offered was that if you walk into let's call them a performer or an intuitor, some people call them. The leader sometimes is called a sensor, depending on the model again. But the intuitive, the fast, people-oriented type, if they have pictures of their family or events or things they own, they will have them so that when you walk into their office, you see them. Their wife, their children, their home. To them, these are their possessions. They're part of who they are. They make up their whole image because they're very much about image. And so I think that pretty much covers the intuitors. You can pick up on that. So now let's move below the horizontal line and lower left to the methodical, task-oriented. Now this is your technical person. This is your computer wizard. And this is the person who corrects your grammar, spots the typo first. For them, it's all about quality, precision, and details. It's not about deadlines. If you try to rush them on a deadline, it could cost you more time. They can lose track of time because they get so focused on, typical perfectionists, perfecting a project that they're working on that they can lose track of time, show up late, or just miss the deadline. And trying to rush them on deadline is very, very difficult. So they're smart, and they're creative, and to the point that they don't understand, this is strongly stereotypical, but they don't understand why everyone doesn't do things their way. There's their way and the wrong way. If my good friend and former business partner Sean is listening, he knows what I'm talking about. He's a wonderful guy, and I love you with all my heart, Sean. But they are technical and thorough to a fault. Can have really good social skills, but not the most comfortable, not the best social skills. Not intentionally, just so much that they are so task-oriented and getting things done perfectly. They're the thinker. They're the task-oriented thinker. They it's all about quality, all about precision, all about details. They can be great because if they're in a meeting with the sensor, the CEO type, the fast task oriented, or the intuitor, who are ready to move down the road, they are the, oh, what about this? Did you consider this? And so they can be incredibly valuable in a company because they will insist that it not be done. One of their favorite phrases is that seat of the pants. They don't like anything that's seat of the pants. Seat of the pants. They want it nailed down, precise. Okay? And they are the technician. They're the thinker, the technician. Okay, the lower right, this is the methodical, very people-oriented. And some models are called feelers. They are all about feeling. And to them, everything is about relationship. Everything. Everything in their life is about preserving, keeping, building relationships. They're great gatekeepers, front office administrators, personal assistants to CEO types, and performers or charmers and intuitors, because they're very detail-oriented. They'll take the time, they'll be methodical, they'll keep track of appointments, and so they clean up the messes that the CEO types and the performers tend to leave behind in business. They remember every vendor and salesperson's birthday and anniversary and children and remember conversations from 6 months ago. My wife, certainly in her perfect balance, is very much in this category. If we go to a grocery store that we may not have been to, at least in my recollection, for 2 or 3 months, she will meet the person bagging the groceries at the end of and remember that their Aunt Dot had a toe operation and how's the dog. And Jeff, you remember, and she'll know their name. And so she just builds and builds relationships, and of course everyone loves her. She's just such a beautiful person. But the one thing about this person, because everything's about relationship, change can threaten a relationship. So even moving their desk, rearranging their office without letting them know that can be very threatening. They like, I think my teacher said, they like evolution rather than just change, just boom, change. So change is not comfortable for them because it may disturb the relationship. And so just as a quick wrap-up here, and I hope you've gotten this as I zip through it, the leader, this will give you a picture of it. The CEO type, the fast, task-oriented, let's say we're going to have meetings with each of these people. When they show up, as soon as they walk through the door, before their notebook or materials hit the desk or the conference table, before it hits it, they will say something like, let's get to work, the minute they walk through the door. Okay? The fast people-oriented, the performer, the charmer, the intuiter, will first say, hey, nice tie, nice pin, beautiful day, how'd your golf game go? They are people-oriented before they get down to work. The slow, methodical, prefer methodical, task-oriented, the thinker, the technician, they show up 10 minutes late and say, you gave me the wrong directions. I'm just going to move on from that without any comment, other than that. And the methodical, people-oriented, the relators, the people who are about relationships, when they show up, it's, can I get anybody anything? They know what you have in your coffee, and they can take care of the details and move you in that direction. So I want to go back a bit, kind of keep the rhythm. We talked about some practical steps. We talked about the pie and the pieces of pie, and I touched upon inner work quite a bit. And then we were back to some practical observations of the different personality types. And I want to come back to some more inner work. As I said earlier, if you have your own tradition or method for relaxation or handling stress or going inside, then great. I just want to stress the importance of this. I believe that inner work is so critical. It's the balance to just writing down our goals and plowing ahead with them. I believe that when grim determination and joyful exuberance attempt a task, that will a grim determination win? The tortoise and the hare came to mind. Maybe so. But the joyful exuberance can just add a quality to life, and often the joyful exuberance does win the day. And I apologize to whoever wrote the tortoise and the hare. If you know, let me know. Okay. So I want to talk about the tools of doing the inner work. I have developed a model, over 30 years, and I'll just kind of take you through it, and then we're going to spend a little time in some visualization and some guided imagery. And before I go, I want to talk about some great guests that I have, some possible upcoming guests for my show over the next few weeks. I just heard from some great people. Internet radio is amazing to get up in the morning and receive emails from literally around the world. It's so neat. I have no idea, obviously, on internet radio, if I were 3 people or 12 people or 1,200 people listening to this show or tuning in briefly, but I do get a few emails every week, and it's really neat to know that there is someone on the other end of this microphone. Okay, let's do some inner work. Just relax. That's the beginning point. What I offer is a cue, the letter Q and the Q, C-U-E. And what I'd like you to do right now, if you're driving, don't do this, just remember it and do it when you get home, but you're probably not driving if you're on internet radio, unless you have a wireless going in the car. What I'd like you to do is stop right now and don't do anything. Just stop. Just push yourself back from the desk or just shift your position in the chair or where you're standing or what you're doing. Just kind of comfortably observe the present moment. And there's a lot of that being in the now and all this, but however that appeals to you, but I call it quiet awareness. Simply go into a mindset, a place of quiet awareness. Just be quietly aware. Just be quietly aware of your surroundings. Take a look at what's going on. Now you notice that in a nanosecond or a few seconds, thoughts come up, the inner chatter starts, we start narrating, we start thinking about different things, and so the quiet awareness can be difficult to sustain for very long. And to help you with that, we're going to take it to the next step. So we've gone to quiet awareness, and write down or think of QA, quiet awareness. To maintain that quiet awareness, and also I just want to mention to you and hopefully point out to you or maybe anchor you with this thought, that simply taking a few moments of quiet awareness, as you do that, as you become practiced in that, you will feel a settling, a relaxation, a stress management technique, a relaxation response that is literally immediate. As soon as you consciously make that choice to stop and just be quietly aware. Just looking around. Oh, I lead a privileged life. I happen to be looking out at the intercoastal waterway, out my living room, and out my kitchen window. I'm looking between two huge condominiums on Madeira Beach in Florida and looking across at the Gulf of Mexico, the bay. So for me to go quietly away and look out at the water is simply beautiful. It's easy to do and comfortable to do. And as I said, as you acclimate to this, as you begin to appreciate, I think that's a good word for it, because I find myself constantly apologizing that this sounds so simple. It sounds so simple. If I can get clients to practice this, if I can get them to do this critical inner work in conjunction with the practical work of defining the goals and the likes and dislikes and putting timetables with the goals, if they will use this simple process or at least let me strengthen a process or a methodology that they're comfortable with, that things begin to change, sometimes subtly and sometimes dramatically in their lives. So enough apologizing for it. Quiet awareness. Simply being quiet for a few seconds. And let's do that. I'm going to be redundant. I'm going to revisit a few times. Just take a moment, just a few seconds, to be quietly aware. Look around your environment without words, without narrative, without thoughts. If thoughts come, just let them go and simply go into that quiet awareness. Now, I know that that quiet time or dead air is a no-no in traditional radio, but this is not mainstream. And I was told by the powers on this radio station that not to worry about quiet time. So it's great for me. So try this a few times. When it occurs to you during the day, take a moment to simply be quietly aware and begin to tune into what that does physically. You know, it's where the mind meets the body. It just you can feel the body relax. The mind has an effect. When the mind goes quiet, the body goes quiet and relaxes. Now, as I mentioned earlier, it can be a little disconcerting because it's difficult, if you will, to sustain that quiet awareness for very long. So here's a technique to keep you in the quiet awareness for a longer period of time. And now we move to something called breath awareness. Now this is a BA if you're writing it down. So we got QA, BA. The BA is breath awareness, simply what it says. Overlay the quiet awareness. Go to the quiet awareness. And now overlay it with breath awareness. Just pick up on your breathing. Be aware. Notice when you're inhaling and when you're exhaling. Now, importantly, overlay the quiet awareness. Stay in the quiet awareness. But now notice your breathing. Focus your attention there. Move your attention to feeling the inhale. Some people even like to imagine not a mask, but like a little ball of light that just kind of gently lifts up in their chest through their throat up to the middle of their forehead, like a light. So they inhale and that light goes up. This is in many traditions. It used to be secret, but now it's all over the internet. And so, if you like, imagine that, like a little ball of light, just very misty, little ball of light that as you inhale, it's at the top of your stomach, and it goes up to the middle of your forehead. And as you exhale, it just floats back down to that original position as you gently and slowly exhale. And so, let's try this for a few seconds. Quiet awareness overlaid with breath awareness. Sometimes, before we start, sometimes I like to kickstart it or use it as a cue, a C-U-E, to this quiet awareness, breath awareness, by taking a breath that's deep enough that I hear it. I make a noise with the inrush of air, just the, and then let it out slowly and gently. And just enjoy the combined quiet awareness and breath awareness for a few seconds. Just breathe. Okay, that was just a few seconds. I want you to just enjoy that. So maybe, I don't think it was 15 or 20 seconds. That was one more important portion of this, And what I suggest is that if this appeals to you, if something resonated in this this little meditation, this relaxation technique, revisit it and wait for it to pay its dividends. It will. And this may be something that for different for different people, a few days, a few weeks, a few months, just this, as it occurs to you during the day, just take that little reprieve. It's a great stress reliever. If you know of something that potentially stressful coming up, or you've got something to face or a presentation to make, just spending a few seconds, literally a few seconds in this quiet awareness, can really pay handsome dividends. Because what will begin to happen in your life is that you will maintain this quiet awareness, this breath awareness, through the presentation, through the potentially stressful situation. And to draw a very obvious parallel or a metaphor, if you look out over a quiet water, a quiet lake, a quiet intercoastal waterway, and it's very placid and still, and a fish jumps, you'll see it. You'll spot it easily. But now if the water is agitated, there's a lot of internal chatter going on, there's stress going on, and the fish jumps, you'll miss it. And think of that fish as an opportunity or a solution that you may miss or you may see in that quiet awareness. So it's just such a valuable tool. I can't stress it enough because it's just so incredibly valuable to just begin with this quiet awareness and this breath awareness. And as I said, after a period of time, I would suggest, this is new to you, particularly, just do this for maybe 2 or 3 weeks or 4 weeks. Tune in every week, 5 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time on Fridays, 2 o'clock on the West Coast. And I will repeat this. I do this each show. I'm pretty redundant each show. That's why I have some nice guests coming in. They're going to give us some neat, new, and fresh information and meat. I'm a vegetarian. I shouldn't use meat. It's nice watercress to chew on. Valuable iron and good healthy stuff. So take a few weeks, a few days, a month if you will, and just do this as it occurs to you during the day. Or maybe, for those of you who like the discipline, like the regimen, set up a time that while I'm taking a shower, while I'm brushing my teeth, while I'm drying my hair, while I'm watching the news, you'll notice that you can do this quiet awareness and breath awareness. And if those who would like to, While I'm going on, just take a few seconds now and just do that. Go to the quiet awareness and the breath awareness. And what you'll notice is that your mental faculties, your rational process, does not stop. You won't miss what's going on. If I say to you what's 2 and 3, you'll still know it's 5. And even when someone's talking to you, you'll be keenly aware and keenly attentive, but you'll be nice and calmly relaxed. I'd like, Yogananda had a beautiful thing about being actively calm and calmly active. That's what this can do for you. And you'll find that, I'm getting a little cosmic here, but it has an effect on time, that it begins to move you into a sense of time that slows down, that you find yourself accomplishing more. I know when this was new to me years ago that I was working in a pretty frantic environment with record and audio shops and wholesale record and warehouse and retail, and so we were always kind of scurrying and moving around. And as I began to practice this meditation, I began to notice that I would accomplish so much and look at my watch, it would be 10:30, and it felt like I had accomplished as much as I had in a complete day. So it has, the benefits go on and on and on. Some have to be experienced. There's no way to articulate them whatsoever. So I want to, before my time runs out, I'm kind of checking in to see how I'm doing here. Doing pretty well, yeah. There's a third segment to this particular model. We've done the Q and the Ba, and there's a Ha, and that's heart awareness. Now this is very subtle, and this is something that, as I said, don't rush right into this. Take some time to enjoy and see the effects of the simple quiet awareness, breath awareness. But your heart will let you know. When you're ready, and again, this is incredibly subtle, go from quiet awareness to the breath awareness, and then heart awareness. And what I mean by heart awareness is go to an inner listening. Now, you can think of it as the physical heart, or you can think of it as the center of your being. Quick aside, I'm reading a lot recently about the neural cells in our heart and different organs, and how our thought that the brain controls everything may need to be stretched a little bit. Recent studies have taken, and you may have heard of this some time ago, a drop of blood, and by just I don't mean to be gruesome here, but just by putting a pin into the blood, that some of the cells will run to heal that puncture of the drop of blood. So I'm way over my head on that and outside of my area totally, but my point is simply that the heart has neural cells, according to what I'm reading. In any event, whether that's literally true or not, heart awareness, the purpose of it is to tune into your inner strength, your inner being, your higher self, your source, whatever term you want to use, whether you're in use theistic language or not, absolutely not necessary, whatever model. But as you begin to listen to your heart, I think of when we refer to the heart. Number one, I heart New York. is I love New York. The heart symbol is the archetypical symbol for love. So we're tuning into love, love of self and love of this life. And I'm not going to go too far down that road today. Another time I would like to. That as we tune into the heart, it's also when you think of someone who's very wise and kind and compassionate, we don't say they have a good brain. We say they have a good, altogether now, yes, heart. And so heart awareness is simply listening inside, listening in the area of your heart. And the model that I like to create is one of a wisdom whisper, that as we inhale, that the heart will whisper, not in words, the heart will whisper, and I will talk someday about how beautifully this aligns with the opening of chakras, that the heart will whisper to our consciousness, that the heart will send a wisdom and a clarity that can subtly and or dramatically thunderbolt change our lives. And so there you have my mystic heart meditation. It's Q-Ba-Ha. Now, some people like to use that word, those who like to use a little mantra. And Q is a great start because it's a Q. It's the starting point, the Q, the C-U-E and the letter Q. So the word is Q-Ba-Ha. As you inhale, Q, and as you exhale, the silently. As you exhale, aha, just relax, deep relax. So let's try that, if you like. Q. And so now we have the quiet awareness, the breath awareness, and the heart awareness. Practice that. Let me know. Send me an email. It's jeff@mindgoal.com. MindGoal.com. Visit my website if you like. And that's MindGoal, MindGoal.com. You'll find a few books, some meditation teachings, and some more information about me and MindGoal goal achievement strategies. And as I said, I wanted to wrap up with a little visualization. And just before I get there, I'm going to go a little bit cosmic here, a little bit spiritual, but not too far, so hang in there. When I talk about the lions of fear and doubt, the internal chatter, the obstacles, the limiting beliefs that keep us from expanding our dreams and get rid of the excuses, when we stop underestimating ourselves, that we can move into a beautiful, beautiful place, well, in we'll start with the Judeo-Christian, Muslim, the beginning of the Bible. There's an allegory, if you will, of the Garden of Eden, of paradise, of perfection, of utopia. And for you Bible curious, remember God's first instruction to Adam and Eve? I have put two trees in this garden. I put the tree of life, eat freely from that. And I put the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. That's not quoted correctly often. The tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Don't eat from that, he said. Because that's a deceiver. And as soon as we began to say, this is good, this is bad, my non-dual friends are happy when they hear me begin this, because what happens as soon as we do that, we begin to slip into a secondary identity. We begin to slip into the duality of the world, and we feel separate. We feel separate from people. We feel separate from God. We feel separate from our true self. We wonder who we are. We feel lost. We feel cast out. All those different things that different scripture and spiritual traditions talk about in different allegories, different stories, or literal, if you like. But in the West, typically in the Judeo-Christian, Muslim, combining East and West, but that particular religious group of these people who grew up in these cultures, you know, speak of a deceiver, a devil, a veil that keeps us from knowing who we really are and knowing our connection to God, which is our connection to everything. In the East, more in the Hindu and the Buddhist traditions, they use an illusion, a Maya, that we bought into what I just called a secondary identity. So the solution in the West is to break through the veil, to defeat the deceiver, to quiet those lines of fear and doubt, and to break through, to awaken, to enlighten, to realize who we are, to feel our connection, our non-dual realization, our self-actualization, to realize that there is only a reality that we are in, and that our sense of separation is a deception, an illusion, a veil, if you will. And so I won't beat that too much. Outside of the spiritual context, you know, there's a growing group of people these days who are called non-dual realizers or non-dualists. And what they've come to realize, or what they're learning about, is that once they you know, and this is a tough one, because there's nothing to realize, that it's simply all right there for us, and the shuffle, as it's sometimes called, is that you just have to realize that. But the secondary identity, and that may or may not be clear to a lot of you, replaces our primary identity, and that primary is non-dual realization, and it puts life in a whole new context. It just changes everything about life, and I just kind of brushed through that quickly to say to you that mind goal achievement strategies, that the goal of the mind is a return to non-duality, to return to an awakening or a rediscovery, a natural enlightenment. A lot of different terms and a lot of room for debate. I want to talk quickly before I wrap up here in just a couple minutes about some guests I have coming up. I have Harvey Perlman. He's in St. Petersburg, Florida. He's a practitioner, has been for some time, of something called body talk. And I know that it involves some tapping, and I've read some of the incredible testimonies from his clients. And, you know, he is a healer, however you would want to characterize that. And I'm looking forward to him in 2 weeks. I also have a woman who had a radio talk show for a long time and has done an awful lot of work with parents and dealing with children and communication. Her name is Brandy Winans, and she'll be a guest on this show speaking about parenting. And I also have some authors that are possible upcoming guests, and these are people who have written some incredible books. Rajesh Singh has written The Human Species and Beyond, and just quickly, what he writes about is that in 10,000 years we'll live to be 500 years old, and that should be very interesting. He's an Indian spiritual and scientific scholar, and he'll talk about methods of controlling your mind, preparing your spirit, ways to realize inner peace, peace with others, and how we can use God to understand cosmic evolution, where does science and religion meet, will we really live to 500? So he should be a really exciting guest. I'll let you know the schedule on these in upcoming shows. I have Michael Jones, who says traditional science is wrong. He's the author of a new book called Logical Universe, A Layman's Reality. And he provides a very simple, logical conclusion that shows traditional science has dropped the ball, in his words. He argues that the universe is very simple and logical, and that any layperson can understand, given a few simple theories. And as a guest, he's going to talk about the crucial mistakes that scientists are making, should be a nice, controversial show, pursuing some new developments in science, why we do not yet understand our universe, and what future space travel might look like. And one more that I want to mention before I sign off for the day. Sandy Andrew who believes that we have a preordained destiny that we rarely follow. That's destiny. Believes we have a preordained destiny that we rarely follow. She believes that as the aging process takes hold, we get sucked into careers and life paths and end up losing our real passion and motivations. And that certainly fits into what I've been talking about in this show, and I'm really looking forward to Sandy Andrew. His new book is Your Never-Ending Life, Book 1 of the Universal Learning Series. He'll be talking about steps toward personal fulfillment, finding your life's passion, increasing your awareness of the universe, and the 12 life-changing universal laws, understanding past lives, karma, deja vu. These are authors. Their review copies of their books are on their way to me, and I'm really looking forward to these guests on our show. So I hope you'll let me know that you're listening out there.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning in to our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.